Support for programming on NET Radio comes from the Milady Coffee House, located in the historic May Brothers Building in Fremont, Nebraska, featuring a living room environment for coffee, tea, and light lunches, with meeting space available. For info, maybrothersbuilding.com. And Union Bank, celebrating 100 years of helping families and businesses in Nebraska, and looking forward to the next 100. Offering customers personal and business banking, as well as wealth management services. Union Bank, member FDIC.
Good morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio, live from the Mill in Lincoln's Haymarket. I'm Genevieve Randall. We'll talk with musicians and a composer participating in a celebration at Peru State College next weekend. Also with producers of a theater adaptation of a Willa Cather story staged by Brownville Village Theater. And there's art in Omaha, music by Liszt in Lincoln, and the annual Oktoberfest in Wayne to be explored as well. You might be curious to know what faces go with these voices on the radio, and you can put a face to the voice as well as see our lovely set here at the Mill when you watch the show this morning. We stream video on our website each week. Just go to netnebraska.org and click the button that says Live and On Demand. I'll start with a chat here with Rebecca Fisher and Jonas Sirota of the Kiara String Quartet. They perform at Kimball Recital Hall in Lincoln on Wednesday, October 18th at 7:30 p.m. The second Kiara Series concert at the Glencorf School of Music there as part of the Hickson Lead Concert Series. The concert brings together a couple kinds of heavenly voices, and we'll find out how. Good morning, Becca and Jonah.
Morning.
Morning, Genevieve.
Always nice to be here.
Oh, thanks. It's nice to see both of you again. So one of the pieces on this program features an actual heavenly voice, and that is that of Jamie Reimer. What is she performing with you?
Right. She's performing the five songs for soprano and string quartet by Carl Weigel. It's a very beautiful and kind of, at certain times, like mysterious piece. It has just about everything in it. We've got dance music. We've got, you know, as I said, ethereal, kind of gorgeous, very sweet music. And of course, she sounds gorgeous. So it's a very fun piece, and it's paired with a beautiful work for string quartet, so we're very excited about this program.
Yeah, I had to look up Carl Weigel, I have to admit. I had seen his name before, but I was curious. He was an Austrian composer. He was forced to flee to the United States during World War II. I'm wondering how this piece was chosen. How did you discover his music?
Yeah, well, Jamie actually brought us the piece. It's a piece she had played, and sung. And we were really happy to have the chance to collaborate with her, and we were really happy that it was such a fun piece because it really works great.
Cool. Yeah, and Rebecca, you referenced the other piece, which is music by Aaron J. Kernis, a string quartet, and the title translates to Music of the Heavens. Tell me a little bit about that piece.
Sure. Well, this was a piece that we've heard about for years, actually. It's the second movement, which is entitled Musica Celestis, Music of the Heavens, of the Spheres. Is adapted also for string orchestra. It's kind of this gorgeous, gorgeous, talk about sort of trying to reach the heavens. It's a huge, huge work, just even the slow movement. Sort of a Barber Adagio type of piece, but if you could extend that even further, it's very virtuosic for the string quartet, and the entire work is it's four movements. It's a pretty massive piece of music. It's incredibly virtuosic for all parts, and it just kind of amazed us. We performed it first this summer, and we were really taken with it and thought we'd love to share it with the Lincoln audience.
Okay. And are you playing these particular pieces from memory? Because you guys do that
no.
a lot, but no. Not these. And then speaking of playing from memory, though, you guys are heading out on a tour soon, including some towns in Nebraska. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I don't Absolutely. Know if we... For much of the first part of November, we're touring the Midwest. We're doing a Midwest driving tour, which we don't always do. We often are flying to our concerts. So we have shows throughout the Midwest, including Minnesota, Montana, which doesn't really qualify, but then some dates out in Nebraska. We're excited to be not just performing in Lincoln, because it's been a little while since we've actually driven all across the state. So you know, you'll be hearing more about those, but we're we're excited for those.
Okay, sounds good. I've been talking here with Rebecca Fisher and Jonas Sirota, who are with the Kiara String Quartet. And we've been talking about not only their tour, but their October 18th performance coming up at Kimball Recital Hall, and that's at 7:30 p.m. NET is also facilitating a live stream of their performance, so you could attend, at least virtually, that concert anywhere in the world. Find out more on our website. That's netnebraska.org/radio. And you can click through to the Kiara's website on the Friday Live page. Jonah and Becca, thank you so much.
Great to see you.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Not only is Nebraska 150 years old this year, but so is Peru State College. And we'll meet a composer who's helping them celebrate that. Plus, a drama opens the Grand Island Little Theater season. We'll learn more ahead here on NET Radio's Friday Live. Brownville Village Theater is presenting an adaptation of a Willa Cather story. A Resurrection will run tonight at 7:30 p.m. and tomorrow at 2 p.m. Mitch Bean and Rachel Curtis created the adaptation and co-direct it. And this production, and for this production, Kathy McKillop is producer of the play and, among other things, marketer of the event. Good morning to everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Great to have all three of you here. So why adapt this particular work for the stage?
Well, we came across the idea. It's been about a year in the making, and the goal was to hopefully present it for Nebraska Sesquicentennial. What's unique about Cather's work is, one, they're so well-known, that's so scary and risky. But this is about Cather when she was in Brownville in 1894. And she wrote about Brownville in her journal and in a short story. A lot of focus with Cather is usually on her bigger pieces of works, but this is a really cool opportunity for us three to all work together and bring this craft to the stage. It is an original show.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And what better connection than in Brownville?
Yeah.
Since she was writing there. What's the story about? And tell me about your cast, too.
Okay. So the story is about, well, it's kind of about almost like two star-crossed lovers, I guess, is that they're always meant to be. And eventually, you know, they will be. But everything is against them, and primarily the thing that's against them is that she can't leave her home and he only wants to leave. And so when he does leave, she's sort of left with Brownville as it goes through a major change, and it's a negative change in the way that you know, people leave, that they're waiting for the train to come through, and the train goes through Omaha instead. And so when he comes back, because of unfortunate circumstances, they sort of have, what do you want to say? They want to be together, but she's hurt. And yeah, so that's, I mean, that's the general idea of the story and the differences between them and what they go through and how long it takes them to get together.
Gotcha.
And we're really excited about the cast because we're normally a summer theater, and so we get a lot of actors from around the Midwest. But for this production, we kind of have a mix of our regular company, but we also have some locals in the cast. Locals that haven't done theater for 30 years and are kind of making their debut on the Brownville Village Theater stage. And they're just so much fun to work with, and they've really meshed with everybody that's used to doing theater. And, you know, we've kind of learned something from all of them as well. So it's really fun.
Cool. There is also a Cather monologue, and there's music by Peru State's Dan Holtz. Tell us a little bit about each of those.
We are so excited to have Dan play prior to it. He has original works for his original Nebraska, which is also for the sesquicentennial, and he will be setting the stage for us as we travel back in time. And the Cather monologue is a reflection of how she came to Brownville during this time. She wrote a journal entry called The Hottest Day I Ever Spent, which was a climax of the end of the drought in 1894. She traveled with Stephen Crane, who authored The Red Badge of Courage. They became very, very good friends. So that's part of the monologue that sets the tone for her going back to her room and writing a resurrection about Brownville.
That's interesting because it sounds like we get a little bit of history. You get the whole full setting before you get to see the story play out then on stage.
It really is like that. It's music, it's history, it's culture, it's art. It's about love and tenacity of rural Nebraska and how they managed to move through it. It's really quite lovely.
It is.
So yeah. What were your biggest challenges in pulling this all together?
Okay, you guys go.
I think that when Kathy approached us about adapting it, a lot of it was how do you adapt a show? And the original story doesn't necessarily paint Brownville in such a wonderful light because it is talking about the it going sort of through like a dilapidation and people leaving and... how do you tell this story while painting Brownville as not a sad place? And also, how do you, do Willa Cather the credit she deserves? The story itself, the original story, is only about 10 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And we've adapted the play to be about 50 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so how do you capture Willa Cather's voice? And also, how do you play to, because we knew a large portion of our audience would be Brownville people from Brownville, and how do you do that justice as well, and how do you sort of paint the picture while keeping the story true to its original roots, I guess?
We're very fortunate to have a lot of support from the Cather Foundation. They've endorsed the project, and we have a lot of Cather fans that are coming in as well. And also Humanities Nebraska helped underwrite it. So there's a lot of things that we went through, but at the same time, it's been great bringing this couple from Chicago that moved back here to Omaha now and has a passion for rural Nebraska and Brownville. So I love this multi-generational approach and exposing them to rural Nebraska.
Yeah. Well, it's been really fun hearing about the project, for sure. The Brownville Village Theater is presenting Willa Cather's A Resurrection. That's an adaptation of one of her stories. That's tonight at 7:30 p.m. and tomorrow at 2 p.m. Seating is first come, first serve. There's no charge, but there is a free will offering. I've been talking here about this project with Kathy McKillop, Mitch Bean, and Rachel Curtis. Thanks so much for making the trek from Brownville or Omaha, either direction.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having
us.
Good to see all three of you. And to connect with more information about this production or anything else that you hear about here on Friday Live, go to our website, netnebraska.org/radio, and go to the Friday Live page. Again, that's netnebraska.org/radio. Grand Island Little Theater opens their season tonight in the College Park Auditorium. That's right across from the Sturr Museum there in Grand Island. The opening production is the Horton Foot drama, The Trip to Bountiful. Shows are tonight and tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m., with shows again next weekend, the 20th through the 22nd. Jim Bartlett is co-directing the show and joins me here on Friday Live to talk about it. Jim, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for chatting with me. So this is an interesting show, The Trip to Bountiful. It's about a woman named Carrie Watts. Tell me about Carrie Watts.
Carrie is an older lady who maybe life hasn't dealt her all the fine cards we would like to have life deal us. And she lives in a cramped one-bedroom apartment with her only son and his wife, and it's kind of a precarious situation at best. The son actually was sick for quite a while, so they're kind of living off her pension, and there's some tension, of course, as there is in any family, and she's a very strong woman, and we see that throughout the show. And the family dynamics, she really only wants to, as many of us do in our older years, kind of want to get back to where we started and relive some of the stuff we enjoyed as children.
Yeah, it really seems like there's lots to identify with in this play. You've got a parent who's living with their children. She's coping with change. The children, I'm sure, are coping with having a parent in their house. Also, that idea of wanting to go home. I'm wondering, what are some things that you really like about this show or that you might identify with?
I fell in love with the movie that came out in 1986. And it was, Carrie was played by Geraldine Page then. She actually won Best Actress that year for the show. I fell in love with that show. I happened to be at a meeting when we were deciding this season, and I told him if we don't do that show, I will be very sad. So that started the ball rolling. I just love the story. It's based in 1960, which of course was a much different time than we live in today, where you kind of took care of your family and did what you could. The entire story itself, I can't say enough good things about, and I just had to see us put it on stage.
Well, with the play taking place in 1960, I wonder if you could set the visual there for me. What does your set and costuming look like?
Well, the costumes actually are period-based for the most part. Our set is actually rather dynamic because there are seven different scenes. We basically have a cramped apartment to start the show out with, and then we throughout the play go to a bus station, there's a ride on a bus, another bus station, and then ultimately back to the home place, which is a ramshackly old house according to Jesse Maywatts, and it looks quite the ramshackly. We are so blessed to have some very amazing people here in the community to help out with all the things we need help with to put a production like this on.
Jim, I'm wondering, how did you first get involved with Grand Island Little Theater?
Well, I actually worked at a professional dinner theater here in town quite a few years back, and life didn't deal me the cards I wanted either, so I had to work for a living. But the community theater here has been around for quite a while, and people like myself just kind of have it in their blood, and it's great that we have a community theater to be able to get our acting bug out there somewhere, I guess. Mm-hmm. It would be the best way to put it.
I've been talking here with Jim Bartlett. He is co-directing The Trip to Bountiful along with Norbert Wenzel for the Grand Island Little Theater. Now, those shows are both this weekend and next in the Hornady Marshall Theater at College Park tonight and tomorrow, 7:30 p.m., Sunday at 2 p.m., and then shows continue again October 20th through the 22nd. Jim, thanks for talking with me.
You bet. I just want to mention one last thing. We have a lot of good community leaders here that help us out.
All right. Thanks, Jim. And you can link to more information about Grand Island Little Theater through the Friday Live page of our website, and that is at netnebraska.org/radio. And if you enjoyed that interview or an earlier interview and you wish you could hear it again, you can play today's show as many times as you like online or download it. We podcast the show each week, and you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. The address is netnebraska.org.
A point of pride for many Nebraskans is how long their family has held season tickets to Cornhusker football games. Some Nebraska families even have multiple generations of UNL graduates. The state's university holds a big place in our shared memory, and a new book follows the history of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln in photographs. UNL Professor of Libraries K. Logan Peters had to choose from thousands of photos and sometimes engage in a little detective work.
Every once in a while, I'd find a picture and think, good grief, what is going on in this picture? And then I would have to figure out. Some of those took, you know, a month or two to figure out. And when I gave up and quit looking, then I would accidentally stumble across it some other way.
Learn more about how the story of the University of Nebraska was told in photographs on this week's All About Books. It's online now at netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. The state of Nebraska has been celebrating its 150th anniversary all year, and in southeast Nebraska, Peru State College is also celebrating 150 years. Many special commemorations there have been observed, and among them is coming up in 2 weeks, a concert on Thursday, October 26th at 7 p.m., and that is in the Gendra Fine Arts Building there on campus, room 215. It's titled Heritage, and the concert features the Women's Choir and Concert Chorale, with guest artist, Omaha-based composer and pianist Jackson Berkey, who joins me right now along here with Matt Hill, assistant professor of music and director of choral activities at Peru State College. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. Nice to have you both here.
Thanks.
So Jackson, two of your pieces have been programmed for this concert. One is View Me, Lord, A Work of Thine, and then Certain Am I. Tell me about these two pieces, kind of the circumstances of writing them and how they're scored.
They were both written on commission. Certain Am I was commissioned by the Cantabile singers at Kingsford Oxford School in Connecticut. And View Me, Lord, A Work of Thine was commissioned by Friends of Soli Deo Gloria Cantorum. That's Nebraska's professional chorale that Almeida, my wife, conducts.
Yeah, in Omaha there.
Both of the pieces have, I think, an interesting life as far as my composing is concerned, because each exists in different voicings. And one of the things that I do habitually is I take works that I have written for vocal ensembles or solo voice, and I make instrumental versions of them. And the instrumental versions become homages to the poets. So the piano music that you were playing as we came in, mm-hmm. Were both homages, one to Emily Dickinson and the other to Thomas Campion, an English poet from the mid-1500s or so. And I have done that with a multitude of my works. And the two piano versions that you heard are actually from my set of 24 piano nocturnes. And I had thought for a long time I wanted to make a piano solo out of View Me, Lord, A Work of Thine, because I have many, many different versions. I have a trumpet version that the principal trumpet of the Minneapolis Orchestra plays all the time. And Certain Am I recently, that would be the homage to Emily Dickinson, recently was performed by a wonderful saxophonist at the Edinburgh Festival in Scotland with a pianist who just happened to see the cover of the piece, and that's the reason she did the piece, because it had a picture of Emily Dickinson's home in Amherst, Massachusetts, and she's on the faculty there. Maybe she walks past her house on the way to work, for all I know.
This is like people who buy a bottle of wine because of the label, right?
Or betting like on a sulky because the carriage is really clean.
You know, there you go.
Shiny.
So, Matt, I'm wondering, how did you come to program Jackson's music for this celebration?
Jackson and I have known each other for 20 years or so, and as we were considering what the fall concert should look like, thinking about collaboration between the choral area and the rest of the institution to help celebrate the 150th anniversary, I thought it only appropriate that we have a concert featuring composers from Nebraska. Particularly of benefit to our students is that they will have an opportunity to interact with Jackson. We've had Skype sessions and phone calls with other composers as well, so that those who are music education students have an opportunity to see that composition is alive and well, that music is not simply something that's 300 years old that we get to recreate, and we get to have conversations with composers about...
I don't look that old.
Yeah.
Certainly not.
Certainly not.
So.
And who are some of those other composers, just briefly?
Sure. Kurt Connect. Mm-hmm. We're doing two pieces of his. David Von Kampen, who's a Lincoln guy here.
Yep.
He's directing the vocal jazz ensemble at University of Nebraska-Lincoln. We're doing a piece of his called The Swing. Z. Randall Stroop, who was director of choral activities at UNO for a number of years. We're doing a couple pieces of his. Doug Helvering, who was a graduate student in composition at Nebraska-Omaha when I was an undergrad there, who's now working on the East Coast teaching music. We're doing a piece of his. So it's fun just to have living composers represented on a concert, all of whom have strong Nebraska ties, deep roots here. So thematically, it sort of works for us. But it also, again, I think the real value is that our students get to interact with these professionals who create the art that then we get to interpret and share with our audiences.
And Jackson, how has it been working with these students? What have some of your interactions been? I'm curious to know what they want to know from you as the composer.
Well, they always want to know the same thing. Which came first, the words or the music?
That is the very first thing.
For me, if it's a piece that's going to have a text, it's always the text that comes first.
Yeah.
In fact, in preparation for our brief interview today, I wrote down the poems that I set for each of these, hoping that you might give me an opportunity to read one or the other.
You can choose one. We have enough time for one. Yeah.
Oh, well, I'll choose the shorter one then.
Okay.
This is Emily Dickinson's poem that actually for many years existed without a title. And it appeared in her letters and was published posthumously. And usually is known, usually the title that's given it is the first line, which is, "I never saw a Moor." But there's a very strong message in it, and I chose to take the message and make that the title for the choral setting. This is Emily Dickinson's poem, "I never saw a moor, I never saw the sea, yet know I how the heather looks and what a wave must be. I never spoke with God nor visited in heaven, yet certain am I of the spot as if the chart were given."
And there is the title of your piece then, "Certain Am I." That's beautiful. Thank you so much for reading that. We've heard your music on NET Radio before, by the way. We were just chatting about that.
I'm glad to know that.
Your 24 Nocturnes were featured on The Verge, our Sunday night program, just a little bit ago. And before we run out of time, how did you first get started in a career in music, Jackson? That's what I want to know. That's my question.
Boy, that goes back a long ways. When you get really old, you're supposed to be able to remember things when you were tiny.
Did you grow up with music in your household?
No, I started taking piano lessons when I was five years old. And my first lesson was Papa Bear, Mama Bear, and Baby Bear. That was middle
it.
C was Mama Bear, Papa Bear was the C below, and Baby Bear obviously was the C above. And after about 2 days of my practicing that incessantly, my mother called my piano teacher and said, "You've got to give this child more to do."
We need more bears or something. And I love it. We've been talking here with Matt Hill and Jackson Berkey. Jackson Berkey's choral works, "View Me, Lord, A Work of Thine," and "Certain Am I," will be performed on a commemoration of the 150th year of both Nebraska and of Peru State College. Matt Hill is director of choral activities there at Peru State College. And again, that concert is Thursday, October 26th at 7 p.m. in the Gender Fine Arts Building, Room 215. Jackson and Matt, such a pleasure having you on Friday Live this morning. Thank you,
Genevieve. Thank you. And thank you, Matt. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Stay with Friday Live to hear highlights from our arts calendar, meet artists whose work is in Omaha, and hear a chat with Wayne State's Josh Calkin about Oktoberfest. Serving your community anywhere that might be, NET Radio is Nebraska's public radio network. Online, netnebraska.org. artist Carolyn Albrecht lives and works in a unique space. It's also a gallery with a current exhibition, the title of which connects to that space.
We knew that the gallery was going to be part of the plans for the building, and actually the Urban Dreaming title comes from a little joke I made about getting to live my urban dream in Wayne, Nebraska, because we bought an old brick building. We live upstairs in an apartment, basically, and then we have the gallery space and my husband's office and laboratory on the main level.
Hear more about her urban dream, current exhibitions at Blue Cat Gallery and Studio in Wayne, Nebraska, and much more on this week's Friday Live Extra podcast. You can download wherever you get your podcasts or go to our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for Humanities-related programming on NET Radio comes from Humanities Nebraska, delivering opportunities to engage with history and culture. On the web at humanitiesnebraska.org.
Be sure to check out the arts calendar on our website, both to make plans and to add your event. The address is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here are some highlights. Cirque Italia is bringing shows to North Platte tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. Also, the 21st Annual Schoolhouse Fiddling Bee will take place on Sunday at 2 p.m. in the Old Avoca Schoolhouse. And towns across Nebraska can experience the Welsh Songfest Tour, with the oldest Welsh band in America performing in Scotts Bluff on Tuesday, October 17th, in Llewellyn on Wednesday, then Central City on Thursday, and Omaha on Friday, a week from today. For more information about these and other events, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio. This is Friday Live, broadcasting from the Mill in downtown Lincoln here on NET Radio and netnebraska.org. Still ahead this morning, Oktoberfest in Wayne, Listomania in Lincoln, and a new sculpture honoring Standing Bear. The Bema Center for Contemporary Art in Omaha has another open house, open studios event coming up on Saturday, October 21st, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Holly Cranker, Bemis Center Residency Program Manager, and Tug Collective, who are Bemis Center Artists in Residence, Galen and Gustavo Aguilar, tell us about this month's events. Good morning to all of you, and thanks for driving from Omaha.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Nice to see you. So, Holly, what exactly happens at a Bemis Center Open House Open Studios event?
Yeah, well, three times a year, we host Open House Open Studios, and it coincides with the residency block session. So the artists are in residence typically 2 to 3 months at a time. And this is a great behind-the-scenes opportunity for our audience to come to the Bemis Center, kind of explore the artist studios, meet our residents, and learn more about their practice.
And what kind of art might one see when they're coming to the studios that Saturday?
Yeah, we've got a wide variety of artists right now working in different mediums, and we're really excited that during this open house, open studios, we have an hour dedicated to live performance, and so many of our artists and residents are working in different realms of live work, right? And so that looks like performance, some vocal work, some interpretations of their practice manifested into live performance. And so we have five different artists that are going to be sharing some different works that they've been developing and would like to put in front of an audience, and so that'll happen. And we've got a nice range of artists working.
All right. Well, two of your artists are right here, so we should get some information from you guys. Galen and Gustavo, what will you be creating at the event?
Well, we're here in Omaha working on rendering into an exhibit or an installation work or materials that we collected while doing a project on the Lewis and Clark Trail last summer. So it's turning into work that has material, has objects in it, but we're also trying to figure out a way for a lot of those embodied experiences that we had doing this project to kind of come through in the work that we're doing.
Okay. And what exactly is Tug Collective? Where does that name come from? Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, Tug Collective came about. Me and Galen were married, but we were also very interested in exploring issues of justice, equality, and many other things that are happening throughout the world, not just in the United States, even though we concentrate in North America with our work in a microscope. So we started working together to create interdisciplinary work that takes history and places it back in the present and looks into the future and how we're working as citizens of this nation and how we're interacting with other parts of North America. So far, that's been where our work has been kind of gravitating through. So we're kind of a social practice, research, performative group.
Yeah, I went to your website and I noticed you hear music start up, so you get kind of an audio. It's very visually beautiful to look through. And then you guys really do a lot of research that have to do with social, economic issues and all kinds of things that could affect us. I'm kind of wondering if people come through, what kinds of questions they have for you about your work? Like what's the before and after as you do these projects?
We often get a lot of questions like, what is this? Because yeah. I think when things are framed as art, we're often focused on a material object. But like I mentioned, what we do is very ephemeral. And, you know, we are embedded in community whenever we do our work, and we're very process oriented. And so sometimes you're not claiming any kind of victory, right? Like, you know, what you have to show is something that you all as a collective have experienced together and that can't be really articulated.
All right,
interesting. Yes, but as Galen just mentioned, that's probably that we work very much in the ephemeral, and that's why maybe you see all those elements. We're trying to capture a little bit of sensorial, you know, what we feel sensorially, and let people then experience those for themselves. So the question is, am I thinking, do I get this the right way? And we always answer, of course, it's your interpretation of what you're getting.
Right. Each individual has their own interpretation. Holly, people will also be able to see the Benefit Art Auction and Exhibition. What is that?
Yeah, well, that is our annual fundraiser. And so we've had an open call over the summer inviting artists to participate and contribute artworks. And then those are auctioned off the night of October 27th. And it's a fun party. It's a huge event that we host. And we'll also have a concert post-benefit with Closeness and Colts. And so that's really exciting. It's a new element that we've added to this year's benefit. But all the proceeds that we raise at the benefit go directly to our programs at the Bemis Center.
All right, the Bemis Center for Contemporary Art in Omaha. They have an open house, open studios event, and that's a week from tomorrow, Saturday, October 21st from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Holly Cranker is Bemis Center Residency Program Manager, and Tug Collective is Galen and Gustavo Aguilar, Artists in Residence. Thanks so much for telling us about the event and about your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And there is one piece of art on the NET Radio Facebook page. Be sure to check that out. Also, if you need more information, you can link to the Bemis Center for Contemporary Arts website on the Friday Live page right there at netnebraska.org. Many festivals happen in the fall, and among them are some musical celebrations like the annual Oktoberfest at Wayne State College. Events get started on Wednesday, October 18th, continuing through the 19th and 20th, and concluding with a performance from the Low Brass Studio. And in fact, all three of those nights, there are performances at 7:30 p.m., and that's in the Lay Theater in the Brandenburg Education Building. WSC instructor of low brass, Dr. Josh Kalkin, joins me to talk about Oktoberfest. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning. How are you today?
Doing pretty well, thanks. So, Oktoberfest, we get started on Wednesday, October 18th, with someone visiting from the University of Wisconsin-Platteville. Who is your guest, and why is it important to bring those guests in for your brass students to meet?
My guest is Dr. David Earle, and he is the low brass teacher up at University of Wisconsin in Platteville. I haven't known him all that long, actually. We met at a tuba conference in March of last year, and then as it happened, we were playing together in a group at the North American Brass Band Association competition, also in March. So we spent about a week and a half together after never having met, and decided we were going to do a recital exchange. So he is coming down here on Wednesday for his recital, and then I'll be going up there in November to perform for his students.
How cool.
important that our students get some different perspectives on their musicianship. With studying music privately, you get to meet with one teacher every week for your entire college career. And that gives you one really strong perspective on your musicianship. But it's very helpful to get some outside opinions from other experts in the field, as well as to hear other professional players. So he's coming in to do not only his recital that evening, but he'll be doing a master class on the next day in the afternoon. And he's going to spend some time working with some of my private tuba, euphonium, and trombone players as well.
And then as Oktoberfest continues on Thursday evening, one of those recitals is a recital by you. And I noticed included in the composers is an arrangement of a Vivaldi violin concerto. How common is that for tuba players to borrow from other instruments?
It's actually very common. The tuba, of course, wasn't invented until 1835. So we don't have a lot of music written for us by what you might think of as the big-time, heavy-hitting composers, names that a lot of people will know. We have no music by Bach. We have no music by Mozart. We have no Beethoven. We have none of those composers wrote for our instrument. And so unless we want to play only music written after 1950 or so, we have to steal from other instruments. So I've done pieces for cello, pieces for flute, this one for violin coming up. I've done oboe works, bassoon works, all manner of things. In order to have a good, varied diet as a musician, we as tuba players just have to steal from other people.
How many composers are, or maybe who are some of the composers that actually write for the tuba?
Probably what comes closest to a household name would be Vaughan Williams. He wrote probably the most famous tuba concerto, and that was back in 1954. We also have a mainstay of our repertoire was by Hindemith, which is the tuba sonata that he wrote. But other than that, most of the composers that write for the tuba tend to be, I don't use the word obscure necessarily, but unless you run in musical circles, you probably wouldn't recognize the names very well.
Now, as part of Oktoberfest, we mentioned that there are recitals open to the public each evening, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Friday, all at 7:30 p.m. And that Friday recital is the Low Brass Studio Recital. These are your students. Who's playing and what instruments are they playing? What kind of music is it?
It's kind of a mixed bag. I have all of my trombone, euphonium, and tuba students of various levels. So some of them have been taking lessons for a few years, and they'll be juniors and seniors in school. Sophomores and freshmen are included as well, as well as some of the students who are taking lessons in a secondary area. So they may be clarinet majors or percussion majors who also happen to play euphonium or trombone and they take lessons. So they'll be performing as well. A number of different works for low brass will be featured. Some music by Nellie Bell, some music by Mozart is going to be on there, a couple of Galliard sonatas, a number of different pieces. And we're going to conclude with actually some low brass choir music as well.
So, Josh, I may have asked you this before. I don't know. How did you choose the tuba?
I didn't. Like a lot of tuba players, I was given the tuba by a very opportunistic band director who saw that I was somebody who was flexible and willing to switch. I started as a trumpet player, and our tuba player, when I was in middle school, moved on to the high school, and we needed one in our band. And so my band director said, hey, you seem like you might be willing to try this thing out. And so he put a tuba in my lap and sent a fiberglass sousaphone home with me for practice, which my mother was very thrilled to have in the house. And the rest, as they say, is history. It kind of became my first love, so to speak.
Josh Calkin is instructor of low brass for Wayne State College. Their 11th annual Oktoberfest takes place October 18th, 19th, and 20th. And there are recitals at 7:30 p.m. in the Lay Theater on campus there each one of those nights. October 18th, it's Dr. David Earl. On the 19th, it is Josh Calkin. And concluding on the 20th with the low brass studio recital. Josh, thanks so much.
All right, thanks for having me, Genevieve.
Informing and inspiring Nebraska with unique programming, this is NET Radio and netnebraska.org. Thanks for listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio and for listening or watching on our website, netnebraska.org. If you've seen historical news clips of girls fainting or crying over the Beatles or appearing to have some kind of fever, you'll notice that those newscasters in those clips speak as if this behavior were new. But in 1841, at a concert in Berlin, and again in Paris in 1844, these intense levels of hysteria were witnessed for Franz Liszt. That effect was called Listomania, and it is also the name of a concert event celebrating Liszt's birthday and more on October 22nd. And joining me to talk about that are Paul Barnes, professor at the UNL Glencorf School of Music, and Elizabeth Grimpo, an alum of UNL and associate professor at Concordia University. Good morning to both of you.
Great to be here.
I love how giddy you both were, actually, even over just the description of Listomania.
Yeah, pretty accurate.
Causing its own kind of Listomania, right? So this is a birthday celebration.
It is a birthday celebration.
And will be webcast live, so anyone in the world can celebrate Liszt with you. And the Nebraska chapter of the American Liszt Society is helping sponsor this event. What is that organization?
It is my favorite professional organization, just simply because I love getting together with them because the people are so much fun. It's not just crazy musicians. It's professional types or anybody that just loves music and loves Liszt and the impact that he has had on music and on new music and things like that. So it's a wonderful group. And I need to mention that because this is a birthday celebration and it is webcast, mm-hmm. the Finnegan Foundation is sponsoring this wonderful reception afterwards. So if you decide to do the webcast, you won't be able to taste the birthday cake.
The cake.
All right, so keep that in mind.
Now, there are three facets of List here that you are celebrating. Yeah. So what are those three facets?
Okay, it's List is poet, List is pianist, and List is priest. So as you might guess, I'm playing on the priestly section. I'm playing this wonderful new work that I learned over the summer, the B minor ballad. And then my dear friend Elizabeth is playing on the List as poet section, and she's doing this beautiful transcription that List did of Schubert, Gretchen, you know, at the spinning wheel. You know, so basically the first section will be the poet and pianist section. The pianist section features, of course, all of his wonderful etudes and pyrotechnics. The poet, you know, his beautiful lyricism all based on literature, and then the priestly section are his transcendental works that are really trying to touch the face of God.
And we should mention that Richard Fountain is also appearing.
Yes, Richard is actually competing this weekend at the International List competition in Columbus at Ohio State. Oh, yeah. And my brother and his tennis friends are actually here in Lincoln. We're having a big football weekend.
A little exchange between Columbus, Ohio,
yeah,
and Lincoln,
perfect
Nebraska.
Perfect exchange. Perfect exchange.
And Elizabeth, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got roped into celebrating List here.
Well, I did my grad work at UNL quite a few years ago, and I studied piano with Paul, and he just made my love of piano repertoire just deepen and grow. And of course, you know, even in addition to Liszt, there's so many other composers out there. So I learned so much from him. And it's been a while since I've studied with him, but he called me this summer and asked if I would play. And I was thrilled at the invitation and excited to do it.
Well, so what is it about Liszt? What instills Listomania in people about him? What should we know about him?
Well, he was tremendously good looking. So I think that's a really important thing. He was tremendously talented, yeah. And he had a profoundly beautiful heart. So he was generous. He donated so much money to causes. He was socially active. You know, whenever there were natural disasters, he came, you know, to the rescue with benefit recitals, things like that. Mm. And he was also a phenomenal composer. And that's what this program, you're going to hear 17 pianists, and the program will have each one of their bios. Each one has a different wonderful story, but it's a real beautiful greatest hits night, you know, of all of the, and you'll hear every possible facet of Liszt's composition in one night.
All right, sounds good. I've been talking here with Elizabeth Grimpo and Paul Barnes, who will both perform on that Listomania concert next weekend, along with Richard Fountain and several others. Who is in this crew, Paul?
Yeah, it's a wonderful group. I had a bumper recruiting year last year, so there are pianists here, graduate and undergraduates from all over the world that have made the crazy decision to come here and study with me. And so I wanted to kind of share the wealth, because I get to hear them play every week. But a lot of the Lincoln community doesn't get a chance, you know, to hear the students play. And so I wanted to give them an opportunity to just kind of hear what goes on at the Glencorf School of Music as far as piano goes.
All right. So that crew plus those three pianists all celebrating List's birthday, among other things. And again, that concert is at 7:30 p.m. in Kimball Recital Hall, Sunday, October 22nd. Paul and Elizabeth, thank you.
Thank you.
Been our pleasure.
Still ahead, a unique artist, actor, and even singer brings his stage show to Omaha. We'll learn more about that in about 7 minutes here on Friday Live.
Thank you.
This Sunday in Lincoln, a dedication of a new sculpture will take place honoring Native civil rights icon Ponca Chief Standing Bear. The sculptor for this new work is Benjamin Victor, an artist in residence and professor of practice for Boise State University. He's in town for the dedication this weekend. Ben, glad you could be here for Friday Live this morning.
It's so great to be here. What an honor.
And joining you is Maddie Fluharty, your assistant. Nice to meet you, Maddie.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Absolutely. So from what I read about this sculpture, a commission came from someone in Lincoln who had learned of Chief Standing Bear's story and wanted to commemorate him and what he stood for. So at that time, Ben, what did you think and what did you know about the story of the Standing Bear trial in 1879?
Well, it's amazing because I didn't know anything about it. And when Judy Goshkabas with the state, she works for the Commission on Indian Affairs, she's the director of it. When she had the idea to do this project and they brought together a committee and talked to me about the sculpture, of course, I wanted to do it just based on the aesthetics alone. I mean, looking at Chief Standing Bear, I thought this would make an awesome statue and sculpture. And he's got this look of dignity, and it just, he looked statuesque. And so I was interested right away, and the visuals always pique my interest on a project. But then as I began to study his life, of course, it became a life-changing work of art to get the opportunity to work on.
So what's the first thing that happens as you're in the process of creating a sculpture? What's the first thing that you do?
Well, first I weld together an armature, and that's basically like a steel skeleton as an underworking for the sculpt itself. And then I work over that with clay, and then we make molds and cast the piece in bronze, or we'll make a mold and cast it in plaster to carve it in marble.
How does the sculpture go from being clay to being bronze?
Well, we do it through the ancient lost wax process. So we'll actually make a mold, which is similar. It's a negative of the piece. So it's similar to like what you'd have when a dentist does a mold of your tooth. And then we'll pour waxes, which Maddie's actually learning right now in the studio. Mm-hmm. She's actually a college student. So
yep. So
it's really cool because I work on a college campus and get to sort of hand down this ancient process to all the students.
So Maddie, where are you from and what kinds of things are you learning from Ben?
I'm originally from Minnesota and then moved out to Boise State to work with Ben out there. And through him, I've just been learning basically the whole process that you don't necessarily get from in a classroom, just from start to finish of bronze work and sculpting clay and finishing it out, even all the way to installation, which is what we've been doing out here in Nebraska so far.
I was just going to say, I think the sculpture has been installed, so you got to witness that process.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
Oh, goodness. Well, first of all, there's this enormous crane out there that you're hanging the sculpture from to install it. So there's just a lot of different steps that go into it and a lot of planning that you wouldn't think of ahead of time. So I don't know.
Kind of nerve-wracking for
me. It's nerve-wracking, that's
maybe
for
not
sure.
So much for you, but I was about to fall over till it was installed and on-site safely, so.
You're watching the hours of work hanging from a crane. You do have sculptures around the world, Ben. Is this your first in Nebraska?
No, I actually have a piece at Peru State. It was funny when you had the guests on earlier that were from Peru State, I thought, oh, that's a connection, and he walked out, and I talked to him a little bit real quick because I did the football player in front of the stadium, which how I was introduced to the committee here. George Newbert, who's an art connoisseur and a director of arts in this entire region.
Yeah, he has a museum down in Brownville, actually, who we also had on the show
Flatwater
today.
Flatwater Art Museum.
That's right.
Yeah, he's just great. So he knew about me through the Peru State project and told the committee about me. So that's kind of how I got to work on this project.
Well, so glad to have you both here in Nebraska for this important project. And again, that dedication ceremony will begin on Sunday at 12:30. That's on Centennial Mall there between P and Q Streets in Lincoln. There's also a performance by Native American group New Breed Singers and Dancers, followed by a 1 o'clock welcome from Lincoln Mayor Chris Beitler, and then remarks by Nebraska Congressman Jeff Fortenberry, Native American State Senator Tom Brewer, Nebraska Commission on Indian Affairs Executive Director, who you mentioned before, Judy Goshkabas, and Ponca Tribal Chairman Larry Wright, as well as my guest this morning, Ben Victor. Ben, so nice meeting you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Maddie, so nice meeting you, and I'm glad you're having a great experience learning about sculpture.
Yeah, me too. Thank you for having us both.
From start to finish, boy.
Yep.
Thanks so much. William Shatner is bringing his one-man show to Omaha October 26th, and Corbin Hirshhorn of KVNO talks to Shatner about it.
I enjoy it all. If I can do it well, if I feel that I've done something well, if I've gotten a hold of a moment that I think worked, then I'm less discontented.
William Shatner, actor, director, fiction and nonfiction writer, and horse enthusiast. Many fans might know him from some of his hit shows like Boston Legal, Shatner's Raw Nerve, and of course Star Trek in the role of Captain James T. Kirk, but there isn't much in show business that he hasn't done. Shatner is still writing books, performing on music albums, and now he's on tour for Shatner's World. We Just Live in It, a one-man show about his life and career.
When I tell you that I talk about comedy, and I talk about children, and I talk about motorcycles, and I talk about gorillas, and I talk about death, and I talk about horses, and you get some idea of the range of the evening. So you can't put your finger on any one aspect because one blends into the other. But what you can say overall was, I never laughed so hard. I've never been to the theater and been more entertained. And those are the comments I get all the time. And those are the most satisfying of them. I love to make people laugh, and here I get to do it.
Shatner was born in Canada and studied as a Shakespearean actor. After a brief time writing for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, he came to the United States to begin his illustrious career on screen. Staying busy means something to Shatner, a disposition that has propelled his over 60-year career. But when it comes to a particular line of work, writing, acting, or directing, he's done it all, and he doesn't play favorites.
I don't think of it in those terms. I don't think with regret that such and such went off the air or I no longer get to do this. I'm doing so many other things, and it's challenging, and I'm enjoying it. So I don't think in terms of favorites, but every so often you hit a moment that is right on, and you think, wow, that was good. It was a piece of music that sang to me.
Shatner's World features anecdotes from his career, along with stories about personal and family life, while taking a step back to appreciate the humor of it all. Examining his life, Shatner's most outstanding qualities might be his work ethic and his ability to enjoy the moment.
You make decisions from the outside and from the inside, those currents that affect you on the outside and the internal forces that are acting on you. You make a decision whether it's to cross the street or to get up and move to another city or to get married or to have a relationship. You're doing the best you can at the moment, and you have to forgive yourself for any decision you make if you think it's bad, because you did it. You did the best you could at that moment. And my life has turned out to be so lucky and so beautiful that to have any regret at all would be so bad that I don't even indulge in that at all. I'm happy. I'm happy.
Shatner's World, We Just Live in It, comes from Broadway to the Holland Performing Arts Center on Thursday, October 26th at 7:30 p.m. For more information or tickets, visit TicketOmaha.com. For Friday Live, I'm Corbin Hirshhorn.
Coming up this morning on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert. And this afternoon, Laura Black and Classics by Request. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of the show at netnebraska.org/radio. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including engineer James DeShano and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall.
Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Lincoln Friends of Chamber Music, presenting the Dorian Wind Quintet on Friday, October 20th at 7:30 p.m. in the Johnny Carson Theater. The concert will include a suite from Bach's Goldberg Variations, a suite from Amanda Harburg, and Dvorak's Quintet in A-flat Major, lfcm.us. Sheldon Museum of Art presenting Now's the Time, a panel discussion of post-World War II art, music, and literature that made New York the cultural capital of the world. Thursday, October 26th, 6 p.m. at Sheldon. For more information, sheldonartmuseum.org. And Lincoln's Symphony Orchestra, presenting the family concert, A Family for Treble. LSO will be joined by Treble, the music-loving dog. The concert starts at 2 p.m. with a festival at 1, Sunday, October 22nd, at the O'Donnell Auditorium at Nebraska Wesleyan in Lincoln. For tickets, lincolnsymphony.com.